Thanks everybody again for being here and for participating in Kyolche and in the retreat this weekend. It's been great. I'm going to talk about, you know, the theme for Kyolche this year is the six paramitas, the six perfections. So I'm going to talk about that and about our Zen practice and sort of, you know, juxtapose the two and talk about that a little bit. So I'll start with the word paramita, which is commonly translated as perfection. Wikipedia has a section on the etymology of this term, which includes these descriptors: highest, most distant, chief, primary, most excellent. Another derivation comes from dividing the word paramita in two. Para refers to beyond or the further bank, shore, or boundary. And mita refers to that which has arrived or that which goes. Together they make that which has gone beyond or that which goes beyond or transcendent. Certainly perfection is beyond what most people believe is attainable. So this idea of transcendent, I think, would apply as something beyond our ordinary way of thinking and of being. After all, which one of us would lay claim to perfection or identify perfection in another person? I was looked into the origins of the paramitas, and it seems that, you know, there's, in terms of written material about where they came from, it's a little bit murky, but it's clear that they reside in teachings from long ago. Among other sources, 10 paramitas are included in the Pali Canon, and the Pali Canon, I read, is the standard collection of scriptures in the Theravada Buddhist tradition as preserved in the Pali language. It's the most complete extant early Buddhist canon. It's said that the teachings of this canon were proclaimed orally shortly after Shakyamuni Buddha's death by the Buddhist disciples, Ananda and Upali, and first written down about 450 years later in 29 BCE. On palm leaves, no less. So this is my entirely incomplete and therefore not entirely accurate information about the sources of the paramitas, but it at least tells us that the identification of and the transmission of the paramitas is very old. So the six paramitas that we're going to be looking at. Here's how they come to us, these six categories of being. And as I recite them here, I'll use different terms for each that I've read about. So the first is dana. A lot of us know what dana refers to. Generosity, giving, offering. Another term I ran across is relinquishment, which I interpret as letting go, which is an interesting take on generosity, you know, letting go, being generously letting go of whatever we might be holding on to or keeping to ourselves. Second, shila, morality or conduct. These include our precepts and parts of the Eightfold Path. The Eightfold Path is divided into three parts, and morality or conduct is one of them. Third is kshanti, which refers to patience, tolerance, forbearance, acceptance, and endurance. Fourth is virya, which refers to diligence, energy, and perseverance. Then jhana, which is meditation, focus, or absorption. And finally prajna, which refers to wisdom, insight, and understanding. So why six? Why only six? If we look at the traditional teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha, or at a book like Thich Nhat Hanh's The Heart of the Buddhist Teaching, it's easy to see that Buddhist teaching is often preserved in lists. So here are some of the lists of Buddhist teachings. You know, the very early teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha, as recorded later, the Four Noble Truths, the Noble Eightfold Path, the 12-link chain of dependent origination. Also, the two truths, the three Dharma seals, the three doors of liberation, the three bodies of Buddha, the three jewels, the four immeasurable minds. The lists keep going. And they include the six paramitas. One of the books that some of us, I think, are consulting about the paramitas is Robert Aitken's book, The Practice of Perfection. This is his book on the paramitas. And he wrote, "The paramitas, or perfections, evolved with the advent of Mahayana Buddhism some 2,000 years ago. They were derived from the three-part teaching of classical Buddhism, Shila, Samadhi, and Prajna." This is the Eightfold Path, which points to morality, absorption, and wisdom. He said they also derive from the love of categories and classifications that distinguishes the culture of India. I found that interesting in terms of lists. So we have six. But wait, other lists include five and another 10. Here is 7 through 10 as listed in Aitken Roshi's book. Upaya, meaning compassionate means. Pranidhana, aspiration. Bala, spiritual power. And jnana, knowledge. So what I would suggest to you is that we can hold this number, borrowing from a phrase from Zhangji Sansa, we can hold the number lightly. Can there really be only six ways of being to which we should aspire, or 10? And when I start counting like that, I think even six seems like too many. I'd rather keep it simple, you know. Be good, try hard, something like that. But six is what we're working with. So we're students of Zen. So how do we approach this kind of teaching? You know, how do we attain or achieve or reach a point of perfection? Again, I draw on Aitken Roshi's work. He wrote, "There are milestones on the path, as the Buddha found under the Bodhi tree, but they are no more than milestones and are not any kind of ultimate consummation. Perfection," he says, "is a process." So we are engaged in a practice that is a process and not an end point. That probably sounds familiar to most of us. We say that in Zen, that Zen practice, which includes practice forms like of bowing, chanting, and meditation, it's not about thinking. It is before thinking. So it's before concepts, and this includes concepts of self, attainment, perfection, and even time. If we were to try to identify time in the unfolding process of our practice, we could easily say now. We practice, in fact, we live forever, moment to moment, or we could say in this ever-present moment, which contains all of the past and all of the future. In the Zen tradition, there is the striking teaching which is attributed to Bodhidharma, who is considered the first Zen ancestor, who lived about 2,000 years ago. And this teaching is attributed to him about Zen. A special transmission outside of the scriptures, not dependent on words and letters, pointing directly to mind. See your nature and attain Buddhahood. So Zen is before words and speech. Zen calls upon us to be clear and in clarity, to find our fitting function moment to moment, in accord with the unfolding of phenomena. We might therefore ask, is it possible to do this, to live and act in moment world, while holding on to concepts, or contemplating them, or holding on to anything fixed, even concepts as virtuous as those described in the paramitas? What I'm pointing out is that the most common practices we engage in as Zen students are distinct from the study of scripture. At this retreat, for example, we spend most of our time meditating, a little bit of time chanting, and a little bit of time in dialogue. We're not reading books and having long discussions about content. And yet, study is a part of our training. In our tradition, we sometimes say, or we have said, that there are five basic forms of practice. We have vows, bowing, chanting, meditation, and wisdom training. So I was saying the other day, vows, we say, you know, cleans our karma. Sorry, vows points us in the right direction. Bowing cleans our karma. Chanting opens our heart. Meditation helps us have a strong center and a clear mind. And wisdom training helps us understand our function. So wisdom training, sometimes called cognitive training, includes studying and listening to talks and working with a teacher. It involves the use of words and letters and of concepts. So while words are not the only way we can convey meaning, they are of course one way, and they can be transformative and enlightening. The first Buddhist monastics, after all, recited over and over the rules governing monastic life, the Pratimoksha. And Kongan work involves working with words and with each other as distinct beings. So to study and practice the paramitas, or any of the other Buddhist teachings that come to us in written form, is to engage in the Zen practice of wisdom training. And you know, I'm saying this not just to all of you, but to myself as well. This is a reminder to myself. We can compare the paramitas to our vows. That is, they're like guideposts or instructions. And these guideposts have been around and employed for a couple of millennia at least. We might think that we can depend on the clarity of our capable minds sharpened by our meditation practice. After all, in the temple rules, it says about our vows, you know when to keep them and when to break them. It's almost like we're given permission to break the rules. And, you know, if we're clear, we can depend on clarity and not on our ideas and not on thinking. Well, there's a problem with that. What's the problem with that? I think the problem with that is we might not actually be clear. You know, we can probably each think of examples of this. I have myself proved empirically that if I'm in relationship to another person with whom I'm in disagreement, if I'm telling myself, I am clear. Chances are, you know, you could say, I am right. Chances are good that I don't understand the other person's perspective. And then instead I should be telling myself, I am not clear. Or maybe, I am arrogant. So clear mind sounds good, but are we sure we have it? This is something from Thich Nhat Hanh I came across. He said, we should not trust our perceptions too much. That is something the Buddha taught. Are you sure of your perceptions? He asked us. I urge you to write this phrase down on a card and put it on the wall of your room. Are you sure of your perceptions? There is a river of perceptions in you. You should sit down on the bank of this river and contemplate your perceptions. Most of our perceptions, the Buddha said, are false. Are you sure of your perceptions? This question is addressed to you. It is a bell of mindfulness. So, bowing, chanting, meditation, and keeping a clear mind are very important. But we can also depend on the clear teachings of our ancestors written down for us long ago. The many teachings of Buddhism, sometimes compiled in lists, point us as we move along the way, orienting us and reorienting us. As I was putting this talk together, I looked over the list of the six and at the descriptors I wrote down for each of the six perfections. And of these six, generosity has been said to be foundational and the source of all the others. But the one that stood out for me as I was looking at them was virya, diligence, which I associate with persistence. This is like our try mind. This word for me resonates as a reminder of how I should practice, or I could say, how I should keep practicing. So over the next 12 weeks, we'll have six talks and discussions, each of which will touch on one of the six perfections. I'm looking forward to each of these talks and to what they, and to hear from each of the people presenting what these things mean to them, and also what they inspire in us, because at these talks we'll be discussing we'll be discussing not just what we hear, but our own experience of what we hear. So thanks once again for being here.